morning. Welcome to Digging the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine, and this week my guest is Teresa Retzloff. She is a master gardener and a farmer, and also a PR person for the North Coast Nature Conservancy. Welcome.
Thank you, Ann. It's North Coast Land Conservancy.
Oh, Land Conservancy.
The Nature Conservancy is a different organization.
I'm sorry.
Related, but similar. No, that's
okay,
fine.
Right. And okay, so let's see. People that go to the Sunday market in Astoria probably know you from your booth of Packy of vegetable and herb plants and lavender sticks and
we had Osman Farm for about 5 years. We were at markets, and our farm was down in Seaside. And I think a lot of people know, the story of our trying to buy a piece of land to move our farm to, which we finally were able to do last fall. We bought a great piece of land. It's about 18 acres out in Olney, just about 9 miles outside of Astoria, which is great, and we're very excited about it. But now we're in the process of rebuilding. I mean, we've basically moved to a property that has been pasture probably since it was cleared in the late 1800s, and which is great, except that we don't really want to do animals. What we want to do are crops, row crops, fruit trees, cut flowers, herbs. Probably keep some chickens to do eggs and, for fertilizer and things like that. So we're looking at a little bit more of a mixed-use crop farm. So there's a lot of work to do to restart our farm. And so,
Also the buildings that are on the property, like the chicken house is in terrible disrepair. The shop is in bad repair. The barn's roof...
We replaced.
Was see-through.
It was, yes. We did replace it last winter, which was a very exciting process. And it's beautiful now. We're very happy with it. It was a little bit of an investment, but we really felt committed to trying to keep the barn standing. And
it's a beautiful barn.
It is. And the other buildings have a lot of potential. We're still not entirely sure about their long-term viability, but we're going to give it a go because they really do add to the character of the property. I mean, it is a historic farm, and especially with the barn, there's not many of them left on the North Coast. And we really felt the responsibility to try and make sure we could keep that standing and keep that piece of history for Clatsop County alive. But we're definitely faced with the challenge of starting over. And, from the ground up, we have a new name. We're now called 46 North Farm. Which is, we struggled a lot with what we were going to call our farm. It was kind of a goofy thing. What are you going to call yourself? And we really wanted a name that was place-based, and it was a challenge to try and come up with a name that made sense to us, that was place-based, that wasn't already taken as a domain name on the internet, because you got to have a website for your farm. I mean, even Only Farm was taken by someplace out in Maryland. It was like a horse farm in Maryland. Go figure. So, and I had actually written a post about it on our farm blog and got an email from my brother-in-law, who's a cartographer at the U.S. Census Department. He's a map maker. So he's very good at location. He suggested, well, why not base it on your latitude or your longitude? So he immediately told me what those were. We were at 46 North, 123 West, with some seconds involved. And so 46 North, it just kind of stuck. So that's where what we'll be known as when we do get back to the market. I hate to tell people we probably won't be there this year. It's just there's a lot of rebuilding to do. And we were just talking about this earlier, Anne, before the show started. I've moved around a lot in my life, and I've started a lot of gardens, as I know you have. A lot of people, you started from scratch, you move into a whole new house, what are you going to do with a garden? And it's kind of like that, except it's on a much bigger scale. I'm looking, instead of square feet, I'm looking at acres, which is a little daunting to suddenly think about, what are we going to do with all of this?
And it's not exactly a blank palette.
No, there is stuff there, and part of it, the thing that I'm really learning, and it's something that I have told other people a lot, and I'm having to tell myself this, is to be patient, and you really want to take the time to get to know your piece of land and
you
understand
don't immediately
it.
Start ripping everything up.
No, because sometimes you don't know what's there, and we moved there at the end of fall into winter.
And so things were dormant.
Things were dormant. The trees had no leaves on them. We didn't know most things were. And we're only just beginning to discover that as spring is starting to come around again. Oh, look, there's daffodils there. Oh, that tree that we thought was a purple beech is actually a flowering cherry. How embarrassing, but beautiful.
Right. You wouldn't go. Yeah. You wouldn't want to have chopped that down.
No. Or pruned it weirdly or done something or just assumed that it was something that it wasn't. And so, it's being patient and waiting for things to come up and also getting to know where the sunlight is. Our light changes a lot in the wintertime here. So you want to know, okay, here's where the sun is in the wintertime, but it may be totally different in the summertime.
Especially if you're planting a garden.
Exactly.
As in a vegetable garden.
Exactly. You really want to know that. And then the other thing, and this is an issue for, I think, most people here on the North Coast is soil. soil? What's your soil like and where is it wet? Because a lot of people struggle with wet soil. And that's something you really, sometimes if you're looking at the property in July, which is when we first looked at the place, you know, it looks fine. It looks great. You're like, oh, yeah, there's tons of land we can use here. You look at it in January and it's a whole different story.
It's a bog.
Well, there are some boggy spots. Yes.
And well, so, by the creek, that whole area there.
There's a lot of bog. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely, you know, marking out the areas where we're not going to grow. But there is some wonderful, reasonably well-drained soil. There's some upland sort of slopes that are going to be great mm-hmm. for cultivation. And there's some really nice soil further back in the property, which is probably where we'll do a lot of row crops. So we're getting to know it. We're going to probably have some soil tests done just to get sort of a baseline of what's the soil
and
makeup.
And, you know, that's always recommended. If you have a new piece of property, you don't know. But, you know, with acres, you're not going to do one soil test.
No, we're going to have to do several. But, I mean, for a home gardener, if you really are just starting with bare soil, especially if you're wanting to grow vegetables, I would say it can't hurt because it'll give you just a snapshot of what's in your soil, what the composition of it is, how, you know, the nitrogen, potassium, phosphorus, how much organic matter is there, what the pH is. And that gives you a sense of how much amendments you actually need to put on your soil. Mm-hmm. It may not be as much as you think, or it may be a whole lot more than you think mm-hmm. to get it to a place where things like vegetables and ornamentals are going to be happy growing. And so we're definitely going to invest in that. Mm-hmm. The other thing we have to invest in is a lot of fencing because we have a herd of about 40 elk that make free with the property. They're lovely. They're big. They're interesting. But oh my goodness, they're shameless. They are shameless. You know,
so they're not afraid of people.
They are. You know, if you walk towards them, they don't really want to hang out around you. But if you're not there, they have no problem just coming right up to the house. And there's deer as well on the property. We live right next door to the Wildlife Center of the North Coast. And there's a couple of deer that are some of their rehab deer that have been released in the neighborhood. They're very friendly. Mm-hmm. They actually come towards you looking for a handout, which is not really what you want in the deer population around the farm where you're going to be growing vegetables. So fencing is the big thing that we're looking at. And we're talking thousands and thousands of feet of fencing. Part of what we've been doing is being patient, taking the time to walk the property, think about where we're going to grow what, and then just mark out and measure, okay, how much fencing do we need to mark out for the orchard? How much do we need for this area? How much do we need for that area? And then figure out how to pay for it.
Okay, so now if you... Right.
That's whole story.
So we were talking before about planting mm-hmm. an orchard near mm-hmm. the highway, mm-hmm. Up near mm-hmm. the house.
Yeah.
And there wouldn't be any point at all in planting an orchard without a fence.
Oh, no. I mean, and that's where patience really comes into it.
I mean,
it.
Even a deer will destroy a fence. Fruit tree.
They would chew it down to nothing, and which is one of the reasons why it's still pasture this year. And so what we're going to do this year is plow it and sow cover crop. And so we'll start working on the soil. We'll sow cover. Probably this summer we'll do, for the summertime we'll probably do buckwheat. Buckwheat is a really good summer cover crop, and it's really fast growing. You can usually get two, sometimes three harvests out of it. And so what you can do is grow your buckwheat, cut it down, it'll sprout again, mm-hmm. cut it down, dig mm-hmm. it under. It grows so fast. And the thing with cover crops is you want to till them under before they flower and set seed. And that'll happen really quickly with buckwheat. And it's just adding a lot of organic matter to your soil and really building the soil. So we'll probably do that through the summer and then in the fall, so a winter cover crop to last through the winter to help, you know, not have soil erosion and compaction from the rain. And then next winter, we'll look to have a fence around it. That's the other thing we'll be working on this summer. And then we'll look at planting bare root fruit trees and berries as well. We're hoping to do blueberries and some raspberries. It's going to depend a little bit on the topography and the wetness of the soil. But again, we think we have a space picked out that we can put in a decent size orchard. And, you know, it's one thing you can get excited and think, oh, I've got so much room. Let's plant 100 trees. But then you've got to take care of 100 trees. So we're going to start small and build up and really see how much work it is to take care of.
Now, what height of fence are you looking at?
The recommended height for elk fencing, I think if you talk to U.S. Fish and Wildlife, they say a 7-foot fence. Most people around here say 8 to 10, and then they roll their eyes at you and say, but that's impossible. Forget it. You know, you're never going to keep the elk out. And I think, you know, sometimes that's true. I think if an elk really, really wants to get through your fence, they'll make a good go of it. But there are some really effective fences out there. I mean, you think about the fences that they have around the airports. There, and I do know people that have elk fences around gardens, and they work just fine. The key thing, and one of the things that we've also been taking the time to observe and pay attention to, is finding out where the elk go on the property. What's their normal path? Where do they like to go from point A to point B? You know, they come on the property out of the woods on this side of the property, and they exit into the woods on the other side of the property. What's the path that they like to walk? And what you don't want to do is put your fence right in the middle of their traditional path, because that's going to really annoy them, and they will have none of that, and they will just keep bashing and bashing and bashing away at your fence because that's where they want to go. That's their path. So what we've been looking at too is, okay, these are the areas where we want to cultivate. Where's the area that's going to be the elk path? You know, where is it that they like to go, so that we can allow them to just keep moving through the property? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that area will probably just end up being a lot of wildlife habitat. And that's great. We're both really into that. You know, it's 18 acres. We're not going to farm all of it. Oh. So, you know, the elk get half the property and we get half the property. I think that's a pretty fair exchange. You know, hopefully we can work out a good deal with them and they'll respect that. And if not...
Okay, so now this year, before the fence is up, mm-hmm. so you're going to plant this buckwheat and you'll be doing all this, mm-hmm. you know, tilling and, yeah. and cutting. And
yeah.
Okay, wait, first, I have a question about the cutting. When you go to cut, you know, cut yeah. down the fruit, are you going to do it with equipment? Or is this something that you do with a scythe?
A scythe would be kind of fun. I've always wanted to use a scythe. I mean, you can do
it's
either.
It's very hard work. It's it overrated is. As...
Yeah, but it's a great workout.
Okay, fine. It is.
So you need a scythe first. I don't have one of those.
But buckwheat is so soft, it wouldn't be hard work. It's not like trying to cut up bamboo with
a
scythe.
No. Well, you could use a tiller. Well, the nice thing about the tiller is it sort of chops it down and it incorporates it into the soil. We have a wonderful friend who has a tractor who likes to come out and tractor on our farm.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Which is so fabulous. And so we may have him do it. Mm-hmm. It's not such a huge area that, a few passes with his tractor and it'll be done. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, we also don't want to run the tractor on it too much because we don't want to start dealing with soil compaction, which again is one of the reasons that's holding us off right now. The soil is very wet.
It's too wet to do a lot of
stuff. It is just too wet. And, you know, it's so challenging because, you know, you have days like yesterday, which was just beautiful. It was warm.
67.
I know. It was just killing me. And you just think, oh, it's probably not that wet. I could just go dig a little bit. I'll be okay. And it's just don't do it. Just calm down. Don't do it. Go do something else. And the thing is, you could plant containers. But you could pull weeds. You could pull weeds. Pulling weeds is a great thing to do this time of your pruning. Catch up on your pruning. If you haven't done your roses yet, do your roses.
Good point.
Do your other perennial shrubby plants. It's a great time to prune rosemary if you've got an overgrown rosemary, things like that. It's a good time to do some pruning and weeding. Like I said, if you really desperately need to plant something because there's starting to be some tempting plant starts showing up in the nurseries, do containers. Get some big containers or small containers and plant, you know, get some soil and plant in that and dig in the soil in containers. But don't dig in the soil in the ground unless you have very sandy soil, which there are some places, mm-hmm. you know, in your listening area that have pretty sandy soil and they may be okay.
Well, I have an area where sand was brought in my mm-hmm. yard, and so yeah, I so put some little teeny weeny double pink primroses around this funky maple tree, and that's really nice right by the front door. Now I have all this pink happening.
Yes, but you have to be honest with yourself about your soil. I mean, you cannot pretend that you have sandy soil if really you have clay. For all you clay people out there, just come to terms with it, admit the clay in your soil.
And add more compost,
but don't turn it under right now. I mean, that's the hard mm-hmm. thing. I mean, there's that classic soil test where you take a big, you know, handful of your soil and you mm-hmm. squeeze it really tight. And if water comes out of it when you squeeze it, then it's too wet. And if you open up your hand and the soil kind of crumbles nicely and falls apart, then it's probably okay. And if it doesn't and it stays in a ball, you want to drop the ball on the ground. Don't throw it on the ground. Uh-huh. Just let it fall onto the ground. And if it shatters beautifully and crumbles into little tiny pieces, it's probably okay. If it lands on the ground with a thud and maybe breaks into two or three big, heavy, wet pieces, that is the soil telling you, don't work me yet. Oh, I'm way too wet. Just calm down. Do something else.
Oh, God.
Don't work it. As you've got it. I mean, probably got another month, really.
Really?
I hate to say this. It could be. Well, it depends on what the weather does.
Right. If it stays warmer, it probably. That wind yesterday afternoon, that warm wind was so amazing. It felt, this is different.
I know. It is. And it's so hard not to get excited and want to be out there, but just.
Well, most people have work, so it has to wait till the weekend. And
that's
so, since, you know.
This is true.
So, they probably aren't doing too much. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about what you might be doing, what else you might be doing. If you want to ask a question of Teresa, give a call here at 325-0010. I'm hoping next week Kate will be back. She went on an adventure to get with her family. So you're listening to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldin. I'm with Teresa Retzloff talking about the new farm. We'll be right back. Well, we're back. You're listening to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm talking with gardener, farmer, master gardener, Teresa Retzloff. Okay, so I've got a note here that this Sunday at the Blue Scorcher from 6 to 7 p.m., there will be a free gathering of people talking about sustainable farming and how horses can be used in that regard. And the following week, it's about chickens.
I know Packy really wants to go hear the horse talk. He keeps sort of saying, oh, maybe we could get a couple of horses and use horses to till the farm. And, you know, he and I have never raised horses. I have no idea how to take care of a horse. And but I really want to attend this and learn. There's a lot of popularity in using horses for cultivation on small farms now. It's more than just trendy. I mean, at first I would think, oh, it's just, you know, people wanting to not use, you know, fossil fuels and all of that. But there's a huge renaissance in horse farming.
There's another thing. I mean, obviously you were saying about chicken
for fertilizer, exactly.
But horses, much bigger fertilizer.
A lot of fertilizer comes out of a horse, too. So I think there are people that are really trying to look at ways to make farms more of what they call a closed circle, a more integrated thing.
Right, so you don't have to go to the mink farm or go to the rabbit farm to pick up manure.
Yeah, you really want to try, ideally, especially for small farms where your budget is tight, the more that you can generate on the farm to meet your needs for soil fertility and all of those things, the better off you're going to be. Because you're not having to buy in stuff from outside of your farm. You're not having to have cash outlay to go buy fertilizer, things like that. And so
now you will have to feed the horse.
You do have to feed the horse.
And vet the horse.
It's not free. No. Nothing is free in this world. You do have to take care of animals. They don't just take care of themselves. But it can be a good investment. And if also what you can do, if you're doing row crops or you are doing some regular plowing, if you can learn how to, you know, hitch your horses up to a plow, you know, it's a lot. It can be, I don't know if it's cheaper than a tractor, but it's different, and you're not having to buy
gasoline.
You buy different fuel for them. It's not
right.
gas, but
you're
it's,
buying grass, alfalfa, whatever,
exactly.
hay, rather than gasoline
exactly.
and oil.
And maybe you have some neighbors who hay, and they may barter a few bales of hay for some vegetables or something. So there's ways that you can get around it.
It sounds
it's
wonderful.
Definitely something. I won't say no to it. I'm certainly willing to go and listen to it and try and figure out. I don't know if we have enough land to keep a couple horses on. I do know that there's a certain acreage that's recommended per horse of grazing pasture for them. People sometimes keep horses in very small areas, and there's just sort of an ideal amount of land that a horse should have.
I can see a couple of horses on your place.
It's not an impossibility.
Of course, anybody can learn how to take care of a horse.
Well, this is true.
It's not rocket science. You can do it.
I've learned a lot of things in my life, so I will never say, no, I'm not going to do something.
I think that's great. All right. Now, the Community Garden Association of Clatsop County is the gardens are starting to happen for this year, and the new 101 garden in Seaside
is so amazing.
Has 30 spaces available with handicap accessible spaces. So if you live near there, that's
I think it's great for all of our South County people who want a space in a community garden. It is beautiful. It's such an exciting thing.
That's right. Now, at the Seaside Pool, there are three spots. At the Hope Garden in East Astoria, there are three spots. At Emerald Heights, there are some spots. And at the Manna Garden in Gearhart, there are five spots available. So if you live in any of those areas and you want to garden with neighbors, call Mary Blake at the Sunset Pool at 503-738-3311. She's the coordinator for all the spots.
Yeah.
And she'll farm you out to, you know, if you live in Warrenton and you want to get in on one of those,
mm-hmm. She'll be able to connect you with the right spot.
She'll connect you with who you need to go with.
And it's such a great way for people, especially if you live in a very shady spot or you have soil that's just really not good for growing vegetables or any of those things.
Or you live in an apartment.
Anything like that. Having a space at a community garden is great. And, you know, if you feel overwhelmed with the thought of taking care of it yourself, you can partner with somebody else going on it together. It's going to be more fun. Share it with a friend or share it with a family, other family. You can get a lot out of one of those gardens plots. You really can produce a lot of food or flowers or herbs or whatever it is that you're interested in. But just try it. It's great. And then it is that community sense of gardening together with other people that I think is so great. I'm really excited for the community garden movement that's happening on the North Coast. I think it's great. And it's just it's definitely one of those ways that our community is addressing some of the, you know, the desire for local food that's just not able to be met by local agriculture because we have such little amount of local agriculture. It's very frustrating. Packy and I just attended the Small Farms Conference down at OSU. And it was really exciting to be together with a whole bunch of other people who are into farming from all over the state of Oregon. But it was also really striking to realize that, you know, Clatsop County has the lowest percentage of agriculture production in the entire state of Oregon.
No way.
The lowest percentage.
Oh, my God.
Of our economy. And, you know, when you think about the history of farming in this area and you think about all of the land that's here, there's very little food being produced. I think that Clatsop County might actually qualify for, there's a designation what people call areas of food desert.
Oh, God.
And I think we might actually be in that neighborhood. Now, having said that, that's, you know, food production that's being reported to the Department of Agriculture. And I think there is actually a lot of food production that happens in this county that maybe is, you know, sort of happening, you know, trading between neighbors, people growing food for themselves, people raising a few animals and, you know, again, selling it to, you know, not for sale in a store or at a farmer's market.
Or like all the 4-H kids.
Yeah. So there is a fair amount going on, but it's definitely something that could happen. We definitely need more food production.
And we need it on a bigger scale.
We do. Access to fresh local food is a huge issue for the coast, and it's certainly something that we're trying to pay attention to. I am participating in a great new group that's forming out here called North Coast Food Web. And I don't really have any contact or actually, you know, you could contact John Dean. He's an AmeriCorps volunteer with Clatsop Community Action, and he's helping to coordinate this group. And it's really just a group of people who are trying to come together and address this issue of access to fresh local food on the North Coast, trying to get producers and buyers and customers together and trying to look at what are the barriers to more food production happening on the coast and what can we do to overcome those barriers and how can we make it easier for people to start farms on the North Coast, for their farms to be financially viable, and for people who want to do it part-time or maybe just grow food for themselves, how can we make that happen more so that we're able to feed ourselves more here? Because I think that's something, it is an issue of food security. You know, we're a fairly isolated community here, and I think we all learned that after the 2007 storm. You know, when you're cut off from the inland valleys, we're really cut off. And the stores out here just have, you know, I think it's a 3-day supply of food on hand, you know. And I think everyone realized by the end of that week, you know, Fred Meyer's and Costco and all those places were looking pretty bare. And it just makes you think about where does our food come from? Aside from the fact that just the fresher the food, the healthier it is for you. And just trying to encourage people to eat more fresh local food is great. And it is better for you. I remember a conversation I had years ago with Jeff Trenary, who runs Kingfisher Farms down in Nehalem. And he would say, you know, when people would sometimes talk to him at the market and, oh, you know, complain about how expensive his food was. And his answer was always, well, do you want to spend your money at the farmer's market or at the doctor's office? You know, and I would rather spend my money at the farmer's market feeding myself well, because truly it does make you feel better.
Well, you know, it's so amazing that people think that food is expensive. We spend so much less on food than we did 30 years ago.
We do. And I think it's a lot about, you know, and I want to be sensitive to the fact that, you know, people are struggling economically right now. And I really do understand that. And it is hard. And fresh local food is more expensive than what you're buying, you know, in Fred Meyer's or Safeway.
Of course, you know what? But that's all subsidized.
It is subsidized. Exactly. That was my point, Anne. I mean, this is food that is, you know, the food that you get locally at farmers markets, that's what it costs to produce food that is not subsidized by your tax dollars. That's just what it costs. None of the local farmers are getting rich on this. Believe me.
No. You know, so to me, it sounds like the biggest obstacle for you guys is a fence.
Well, it's fencing. So, I mean, and truly, it's economic. I mean, right now, it would be great if we could just hit the ground running, spend all of our time on putting together our farm. You know, if I was able to spend 10 hours a day working on the farm right now, we could probably be up and running and producing food this year. We would find a way to do that. But we can't because we have a pretty hefty mortgage now that we have to pay. And Packy and I both have to go out and work full-time jobs in order to make that mortgage, which is fine. And I understand that. And it takes time for a farm to come online, to have your soil able to produce crops at a certain volume. There is that whole patience issue involved. And we're dealing with that. But you know, a lot of it is economic. It was the price of the land. And land is expensive around here. And that's another huge barrier to food production. There's a lot of things that are happening. I will say this, though, Anne. I am really encouraged in the state of Oregon. I think we are one of the few states in the nation that is actually seeing an increase in the number of farms that are happening, that are starting. There's a huge amount of young people who are interested in farming. And we met a lot of them down in Corvallis when we were there for the conference. And we actually attended one of the greatest experiences I had. The day after the conference, there was a gathering that was put on by an organization called Friends of Family Farmers. They have a great website, friendsoffamilyfarmers.org. And they are a nonprofit organization that has formed in the state of Oregon to support small family farmers in Oregon and to work on their behalf to try and address some of the economic and regulatory barriers that are keeping them from being profitable and keeping them from being more farms in our small rural communities. And so I'm really excited about the work they're doing. We were there as delegates from the North Coast for a meeting to deal with what they're calling the Agricultural Reclamation Act. They are putting together a great document to try and help address the issues that face small farmers. And we were there with 60 other small farmers from all over the state of Oregon. I think there was 20 different regions represented. And it was a great meeting. And if you can imagine being in a room with 60 highly opinionated small farmers, all with different issues. I mean, there were dairy farmers and ranchers and, you know, vegetable producers. But there were some really strong common themes that everyone was facing. And so what we're trying to do getting together is just being able to speak with a bigger voice and trying to get people to pay attention to the issues that small farms face.
Well, you know, if we don't take care of farmers, what are we going to do?
Where's your food going to come from?
Yeah. It's kind of basic.
It is kind of basic. And I think it's something that all of our communities can benefit from, especially small, you know, rural communities like the North Coast. Mm-hmm. The more food that we can produce here on the coast, the better off we're going to be. And there is a lot of food that can be produced here. There is a big history of agriculture production, not just dairy, but crop production as well, and certainly raising animals for meat. And we can do more, and we will do more, and there's a lot of support there. So I'm excited about it. It's a great time to be.
You one of many in North Coast farmers?
Of new farmers? There's a few starting. Okay. There's a few that are starting. There need to be more. And I certainly want to encourage people, if you're interested in starting a farm, you know, try and get a hold of North Coast Food Web. You know, go contact Friends of Family Farmers. Find a way to get a hold of me, and I'll try to connect you with people. There are people out there who want you to be able to farm. We're really trying to find ways to make this happen. And so I want more company. I want there to be more farmers like me. I really do. It's fun. I mean, it's great. And, you know, it's going to be a long time before we're out competing each other. You know, there's a lot of market space on the North Coast for people. People really want
local. You could specialize in any little niche if you want to do blueberries or raspberries or chickens or whatever.
I wish somebody would take on raising chickens for fresh eggs, because there's huge demand for fresh eggs on the coast, and no one is able to meet that. So, I mean, there's definitely people out there who want to buy what you want to produce.
Absolutely.
So think about starting a farm.
You've been listening to Digging the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine, and I'm with Teresa Retzloff. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Anna. So great to see you again.
Yeah.